voice of reason in the medical world. Dr. Fred Brown from Griffin Health talks to Melissa in the morning on WICC 600.
Merry Christmas, my friend. How are you?
I'm good. How are you, Melissa? Merry Christmas.
I'm good. Yes. Thank you for being here this morning. And I wanted to let people know Dr. Brown is a human being like all of us are, and he's going to be with his family next week. So
we have
so many COVID questions since we are not going to be talking to you till the new year. So let's dive into them, shall we? Let's do this. Here we go.
Absolutely.
Let's do this. First of all, one of my top news stories actually this morning, interestingly enough, is that a different hospital chain, Yale New Haven Health, says that they are now requiring visitors to show proof of vaccination for COVID or a negative test if they want to enter hospitals to visit anyone. Is Griffin thinking about doing this? We have some people who go to Griffin and they want to know if visitors are going to need proof of vaccination to come in.
Right now, we are obviously evaluating that to take a closer look and see. We actually have a pretty robust mechanism at the front. We've continued to screen everybody as they come in, making sure that they're wearing masks as they enter the building. We want to make sure that people who are sick still have access to their family. We know that a healing environment is just as important as a hospital environment and the medications we give them. So we spend a great deal of time trying to figure out sort of what's the best to protect. Right now, we feel that we are protecting our patients, we're protecting our visitors, and protecting our staff. So we're not in a rush to make any changes at this point.
Okay. So for now, Griffin is a no to that listener who called in.
For now.
We'll see what happens. I mean, look, we're seeing a lot of things happening. Stanford brought back their mask mandate. Places are canceling their Christmas parties. I mean, look, it's changing every day. The CIAC brought back their indoor mask mandate. They were going to drop it today. So it's ever changing. That's what I learned from you, Dr. Brown. Infectious diseases, they're always changing.
They sure are.
Before I go back to listener questions, here's something for you. I was reading this morning that South Africa's cases are starting to decrease significantly. So there are reports saying that maybe the Omicron variant has already peaked in South Africa and is starting to dwindle. Can you explain how this works? How does it go from just being, ravaging an entire country, essentially, to now it's kind of under control? And then it's like, oh, well, so that will mean 2 weeks later, the same might happen in the U.S. How does that all work? I never get this.
Really interesting. A lecture in itself, but let me see if I can sort of simplify it a little bit. So, as you probably can comprehend, everything sort of has their balances. So when you talk about a virus that is very infectious, two things can happen. One is that if it's very infectious and pathogenic, that's a bad thing. And we saw that last March, March 2020. We saw an infectious disease. Nobody had any immunity, and people got sick. We couldn't even detect it, and people died pretty rapidly. So that's one aspect. The other aspect of a virus, especially as it changes and evolves, the other aspect is that if it becomes more infectious, there's a percentage of people who will get it and feel absolutely fine, or not fine. Let's say they have some minor symptoms, or they'll have a little bit worse symptoms. With Omicron, we've been seeing sort of the worst, at least for the vaccinated, we've actually seen the worst being sort of a flu-like illness, and then it resolves in a week. If all of a sudden everybody in an area is now getting this infectious disease, that means that word herd immunity comes back. So all of a sudden everybody's actually had the Omicron, and therefore they can't spread it anymore. And it actually goes as fast as it comes.
My gosh,
does that make sense?
It does. So it does.
High peak, quick. But it ends up going quick. So it's very infectious. But it's looking like the data is showing that it's not pathogenic or not as pathogenic, which is great. And
you've
probably heard in the news that there was, you think of everything that we saw with the Italian, the Chinese, the UK, the Delta strain, all the deaths associated with it. And we ended up seeing, we've only seen, at least in the news, it's only been one death. So
directly
attributed. Now, again, there'll be more because even with the flu season, people die because of chronic illness, other issues, being unvaccinated.
Mm-hmm.
But again, it's important to know that this may actually go quickly. And we're seeing just also in the news today, we just saw that, there's a decrease in hospitalizations, which is actually also a really good sign. Even though there's an increase in infection, they're not getting hospitalized. Mm-hmm. That's a good thing.
Well, and that's the thing, Dr. Brown. I'm glad that you segued without even knowing. I tell you, we share one brain.
Yes.
You know, when people see the infection rate, I always say, I'm not as look. It's not that I'm not concerned. Let me make that very clear. I am concerned.
Oh no, and you. And again, I'm not. I'm also concerned.
Right. I care about the infection rate, but I care more about the hospitalizations. And the reason I say that is because it is very easy. You know, before the pandemic ever came around, I mean, we never tracked how many people had the flu. I mean, you guys did. You did.
Right.
You and
right.
your professional. But like we, the common people who do not do anything with medicine, we did not track the flu. And I mean, you could have one kid in a classroom who had the flu, and then all of a sudden the entire classroom, all the classrooms, you know, families had flu, but nobody really would talk about it because we weren't in a pandemic. It wasn't killing
sure.
people.
So exactly.
That's why, to me, I'm always more concerned about the hospitalizations, because you're talking about, well, now people cannot live on their own. They need medical assistance to get through COVID. But when you see, so when I see a high infection rate, I'm like, okay, well, so there are people who are at home dealing with this, but it sounds like with Omicron, yes, it's spreading very, very rapidly, maybe even faster than Delta, but we have a lot of people who are vaccinated, luckily, and have already had COVID before, that
mm-hmm.
maybe they get COVID, maybe they're getting Omicron, but they're at home, and they're not, this isn't killing them, to put it bluntly.
Yes, that's sort of the theory that's out there right now. So again, I'm not surprised that they're seeing an all of a sudden decrease. And listen, we're hoping in the hospital, and we still are seeing, and we've still seen, you know, we're still seeing about 20% admissions because of either Delta or Omicron, probably more Delta because we did see sort of an increase in Delta.
Mm-hmm.
But again, in comparison, that is a lot less than we would expect with given the infectivity rate that we're seeing in the community.
Dr. Brown, I'm curious, before we take a quick break, you know, when you hear about people who are fully vaccinated or not, you know, we're hearing that about 75% of the people in the hospital battling COVID right now are not fully vaccinated. Does that still mean the two-shot system? Like, if you have the Johnson & Johnson, are you still considered fully vaccinated or no?
If you just received the one J&J, then we consider you vaccinated. Ideally, we want to have if you have the J&J, the two, the J&J and the booster, or the three with Moderna and Pfizer.
Okay, so do you think that's going to change soon when they say fully vaccinated that you need the three shot, or if you had the J&J, the two shot system?
I think it is starting to change. It's interesting because as we talk to our patients, it's sort of we've got the shot and the booster, so we've got the vaccine and the booster, sort of mm-hmm. what we're hearing currently.
Got it.
And then as we document and talk to our patients, it sort of becomes like one of the first things we ask. You know, are
yeah.
you vaccinated? Did you get the booster? And again, the booster is used to increase the immune system to fight off anything that potentially comes.
Interesting. And we are back with Dr. Fred Brown of Griffin Health this morning. So, Dr. Brown, I wanted to chat a little bit more about the booster, actually. We got a question in, why not before getting the booster does a person get a blood test to see if they even need it? And I think they're referring to natural immunity and seeing if you have that from either getting COVID or if you have enough antibodies. Why not, instead of going to get a booster, you know, do people get a blood test to see if they are in good shape, or does it not matter?
That's actually a good question. So the problem is that the test to determine if you have antibodies is not doesn't necessarily correlate with if you would or would not get infected if you had an exposure to COVID-19. So it gets relatively complex. If you check it and then you get a number, we don't really know what that number means. But we do know from the immune system standpoint, and again, it just has to do with sensitivity lab, we do know that there's been studies that have done that actually can break it down, but not every lab actually has that. And there's a considerable amount of research associated with that. So the bottom line is that we're not sure exactly what that number means. Therefore, it's actually better to get the booster and make sure that you have these increased amount of these neutralizing antibodies within your body. We do know that after a six-month period of time, those neutralizing antibodies do go down or become less effective. We can calculate if they've gone down. We can't calculate if they're less effective, and that becomes the problem. And there's a lot of complexity associated with that, Melissa,
mm-hmm.
but just as a rule of thumb, the bottom line is that the test will give you a yes or no answer. Do you have antibodies or do you not?
Gotcha, but we don't know
really,
how much.
It doesn't really give you – it can give you a number, but right now we don't know what that number really means. And we wouldn't want to risk people with a number that we don't necessarily understand. For people who are immunocompromised and people who are cancer treatment, we'll check those numbers. And if they're not present, then we'll give them another booster.
I was reading that, I think, earlier this week that they're at least that's what the headline was. And, of course, I was working, but I saw it on the television. I shouldn't say I was reading it. I saw it on the television. And the headline said a fourth booster or something like that. And I thought, oh,
right.
Here we go. So
yeah.
So is that what you're referring to that we, you know, you're talking about, again, the immunocompromised. But I feel like, Dr. Brown, maybe I'm insane, but didn't we just talk about, like, didn't we just start doing the boosters in September? It hasn't even been 6 months yet. Why are we already talking about a fourth shot?
And we're talking about the fourth shot because I think it's good TV news to talk
well,
about another fourth. I think it's one of those things that it's a matter of a patient and their physician. You know, Pfizer and Moderna are both approved, so therefore can be prescribed by their physician. I think that's a decision by specialists on if a fourth or fifth booster should be used. And, you know, so I don't necessarily think that's a sort of general public sort of thing. It really probably shouldn't have been released to the general public as a thing, because it really is really about managing a patient's care. You know, if someone has a cancer, and they're getting therapy, then what can happen is then they can check and see if they have antibodies. If they don't, they can give them another dose.
Mm-hmm.
That makes sense. It's logical. It makes sense from a medical standpoint. But to sort of bring that out to the public, it doesn't make all that much sense. So, yes, there are certain people that should get fourth or maybe even fifth vaccines.
But you and I have talked about that before where, you know, if it was any other disease or something else that people were dealing with, I mean, when you look at people who are immunocompromised, they're getting shots weekly. I mean,
correct.
And
if someone, let's say, loses their spleen, I mean, we give them a bunch of vaccines.
Right. So to get a booster for the COVID. Yeah. No,
yeah.
I like to just reiterate it for people because, you know. It's a question. And like you said, I think sometimes sexy headlines, they drive me nuts. I hate them. Dr. Brown is here. He is taking your COVID questions. We have a lot, so we're going to keep diving into them. At-home tests. You know, I thought this was a great question. So we heard the president. He said he's going to make at-home tests free and available to everyone. You've got the lines out the door for people to go and get tested in person. So, of course, buy an at-home test. I thought they weren't that accurate, Dr. Brown.
Yeah, that is correct. They are not as accurate. I think the best home test is 70% effective. So that means there's 30% that are going to be false negatives.
Is that because people don't do it right? Or what? Why is it? I don't know.
It's actually interesting. So it actually has to do with the test itself.
Oh, really?
The test is an antigen test. So we would call it a static or doesn't really move. It's either positive or it's negative based on some antibodies that are there. Those antibodies can be neutralized. Testing can be a little bit of variability depending on who does it. So there's all these pieces that are associated with it, meaning that there is a significant amount of false positives, false negatives. Probably the biggest thing is false negatives. You can also get false positives. And because of that, it really does lead to about a 30% false negative rate. So again, there's a significant amount that can be, can actually be negative and really be positive, which is dangerous from someone like myself who's an epidemiologist. You know, the concern is that if you're negative and you're still, you're just like, oh, great, I'm negative. So you're just continuing to do what you're normally going to do. That's how it spreads. So we are a little concerned about that. Now, if it's positive with symptoms, it's likely positive.
Gotcha. Yeah.
But the problem is that if it's negative, then it's probably going to be really important for you to get a second test and get the PCR test, because is a dynamic test. It actually tests for multiple different target areas, and the way I think about it is, it's if you think of like a pregnancy test or a plus minus test, you put something on it and it changes color and then, okay, it's there. That's similar to what we're dealing with
gotcha.
The antigen test. When we go with a laboratory test, a PCR test, we're actually looking for that genome in a whole bunch of different sequences to determine what it is. And then we can then take it and take that same sample, and we can even do a full sequence to see if it's Omicron, Delta, or or whatnot.
Mm-hmm. Another question that came in, Dr. Brown, Pfizer's vaccination for kids is saying the antibodies is too low. Why is that? I don't think I've even heard about that. Are we hearing some not the best news on the children's vaccines? I haven't heard much about this.
I have not heard that.
I haven't heard that either.
I haven't heard that. It's in fact, I know the dose is less, which I know we've talked about in the past, you know, that we are giving a lower dose. My understanding was it was a pretty robust response, as I would expect with children to have a robust response to any vaccine, and especially this one.
Yeah. Okay.
Keep an eye out on that.
Okay. Thank you. Another question that came in was actually in regards to children's vaccines. We saw that the kids under five, that they were potentially looking to make that a three vaccine shot for the kids, for the toddlers and the babies, but they're going to maybe hold off for another year. Do you have any insight on that one? I've had a couple questions on that.
Unfortunately, I do not.
That's okay.
Yeah, that one's a little bit more still. And it
doesn't
really
seem like it's
data.
Yeah, I was gonna say, and it doesn't seem like it's coming for at least another year. So we've got time to figure that one out. And then I think the last question is, of course, the concern over the J&J. Obviously, we heard that if you want to get the booster, it's been recommended to get the Pfizer or Moderna booster. Do you think, though, because we've seen this before, where J&J has been pulled from the shelves, went back on the shelves a couple weeks later, and it's because of a very, very, very small percentage of people who are having blood clotting issues. So should people be concerned? Do you think J&J will eventually have a booster or no?
That it's really interesting. I'm not sure. I mean, I think way before, even before we started talking about boosters, I got in a little trouble and said, you know, if you got the J&J, I think you and I talked about this, if you got the J&J, then I would get a Moderna or
right,
a Pfizer.
Right, right, right. Well, I mean, it makes sense, though, because you're talking about a full vaccine. So it's not a booster shot. It's not a booster shot. You know, it never was a booster. So.
That's right. It's a revamp. I actually don't see that the J&J will come out with a booster per se. I mean, they kind of do, but I don't know. It really is going to depend on the company themselves. You know, do I think it's safe to get a second J&J? Absolutely. I think it comes down to the business and that business aspect. You know, does it make sense to have it? Are people going to want to get it? Especially with Pfizer and Moderna being the predominant vaccines that are there.
Sure.
It's a different mechanism, which we now know that both the Pfizer and the Moderna actually have a great response and allow the body to respond to a lot of these proteins that are released when it's given. So I don't really see it, but that's my guess.
Okay. No, and I saw Moderna, actually, the Moderna booster is stronger than Pfizer's booster against Omicron. I thought that was really interesting. I saw that report as well. It was like, not much.
Yeah, it's not much. And interesting enough, there's actually, I'm going to use this non-medical term. There's more, I'm going to say stuff, but that just means that there's just increased amount of mRNA that's in the Moderna versus the Pfizer.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah, so it actually has a little bit of a higher concentration. So I wouldn't be surprised that you would see a slight difference. Listen, it is nothing that I would have a preference for. Pfizer and Moderna, in my mind, are, you know, either one are absolutely good to get. But yeah, I'm not surprised because they did have a higher concentration, I should say.
Okay. Well, Dr. Brown, unfortunately, we've gone over time, but it was so worth it. We have so many more questions. I apologize to anyone who I didn't get to today. I hope you and your family have an amazing, amazing holiday, and I can't wait to talk to you and continue chatting with you in the new year.
Thank you very much, Melissa. You too.
All right. Thank you. That is Dr. Brown here of Griffin Health here on WICC.